Please help the group welcome our speaker for the evening, Joey H. from the Easton Group. 7 o'clock Friday nights, Joey H. from Easton, Pennsylvania.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for the welcoming. I'm Joey. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm really happy to be here tonight, and I'm going to have my book here. I may refer to it a few times. Please bear with me, you know. This is a big group. My God, I see people here from everywhere. Phillipsburg, Easton, my friend Steve showed up. Thank you, Steve. I have all kinds of people here that have showed up tonight. So thank you for that. And God has all power over this meeting. God has all power over whatever is about to be experienced tonight. Through my voice, it'll come to me soon. Been here before. I've been AA before, you know, and I did not have a personality change. My sobriety date is December 26th of 2005. I got sober at 50 years old. I am 56 years old standing before you tonight and feel really terrific about that. The first time I showed up in AA was on September 13th of 1996, and I was able to stay sober for a period of time. But my first introduction to AA was when I was 21 years old. I went to a meeting in Allentown with my brother, and I'll probably refer to him a few times this evening. It was at Allentown Osteopathic Hospital, and I was 21 years old, and it was one of those meetings where you introduce yourself as you go around a room. And, hey, I was there to support my brother. He needed help. My life was fine. You know, I was bookmaking. I was partying a lot. I was doing a lot of things at that age, at 21 years old, that kids do. You know, fresh out of high school, no plan. And I was there to support my brother. And my brother, when it got to his point, he said, "My name is Sam. I am an alcoholic. This is my brother, Joey. He is too. He just doesn't know it yet." And he really said that. And I thought the nerve of him. I was embarrassed. I was doing really well. And the first time I got into the rooms was at 39. So that trip between 29 and 39, you know, we've all experienced it. You know, it wasn't great. I drank a lot. I partied a lot. You know, I hung with really not terrific people. I hung with, you know, guys that were bookmakers. I hung with panhandlers in barroom, and which I eventually became. But I'm not here to talk about everything I ever did while I was drinking. I came into the rooms like in 1996, like really broken down. I thought I was really broken down. And what I really experienced at that time was I ran out of money, booze, and stories all at the same time. And I went to rehab. And I went to a place called Eagleville Hospital. And I stayed there for 28 days. I came out of that rehab, and I got a job. I did some of the things that the people in AA told me to do. I went to a meeting when I first got out of there. And I remember guys used to always say, I don't hear it too much anymore, but I remember people used to go, like, stick with the winners. And being a very, very sick person, coming out of rehab into AA with not really good thinking, you know, the people that were winners to me that were sharing the same crap that I was thinking. So if you were telling me, take it easy, you know, don't worry, you're going to be okay, I was okay with that. If you were talking about God in the steps, I wanted zero to do with you. Nothing. Like, I just couldn't hear that message. So I was attracted very early to people that were very sick, just like me. Very early. So they would say, you know, go to a meeting every day. Do 90 meetings in 90 days. And don't get me wrong, you guys. All that stuff is great. It's terrific. But what I found out through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it cannot be in lieu of the steps. My experience is clear. It is clear. I drank again after 9 years. And when I drank again, I didn't have power. I didn't have power to think it through. I didn't have power to call my sponsor. I didn't have power to eat my coin. I didn't have power to do any of the things that those people told me to do. And I was one of those people. I was one of the people in AA. You know, the big book tells me that I can't give what I don't have. And I like that message. You know, I really do. So I'm like, I'm 4 years sober in AA. I'm 4 years sober. I did not experience a personality change. And I'm sitting in a meeting in downtown Easton. It's 8 o'clock on a Thursday night. Excuse me. It was March 2nd, 2000. I'm 4 years sober. I'm in a meeting. It's 8:30 at night. It's an 8 o'clock meeting. These four girls walk down the steps, and they go, "Joey, something's the matter with your brother." And I go, "What's wrong?" "Well, the ambulance has taken him out on a stretcher in downtown Easton on Front Street." Well, I finished the meeting. I went to the hospital, and I called the girl up that I was living with at the time. She met me there. We went to Easton Hospital. My brother was he was on a motorcycle. He had a bandana on his head, like I see a lot of guys in AA. They drive motorcycles, which is a great thing. It's a lot of fun. I got to the hospital. My brother was laying there on the bed, and he was already dead. He died. He died. And my brother was trying to get sober for years, and he always wanted to give me this. He always wanted to give me this, and I didn't want it, and as it turns out, I know now from going through the steps, like, he was unable to transmit it either. He was trying to get sober for 30 years, and he'd get a period of time and go back out, a period of time and go back out. And that night in that hospital, I remember standing there, and I stayed in that hospital till he was hot. My brother was, his body was warm, and I stayed there long enough until, you know, everything got cold, and, you know, I was touching his hands and touching his arms, and I was with a girl that I was dating at the time, and, you know, I looked at my brother and I thought, wow, this is the most powerful message that I'll ever, ever get. I will never, ever forget this. And that was on March 2nd of 2000. I'm going to spring ahead. Sometime in April 2005, as I journeyed through those next 4 years, untreated, uninformed, unequipped, I didn't know what it meant to say I'm alcoholic. It was easy for me to come into a meeting and say, "Hey, I'm Joey, I'm alcoholic." You know, I didn't know what that meant. And at that point in my life, I really thought, like, just not drinking and coming to meetings was good enough. Hey, I used to hear the message all the time. It's progress, not perfection. You know, so I figured I'd come in here. I'd, you know, go out and crap all over the world, come back into AA, share with the people that I was attracted to, and they'd say, "Don't worry about it, Joey. Don't worry. You're going to be okay. Just keep coming back." So I would come into AA, leave the room, and, you know, I'd go out and be the same person without a drink, the same person without a drug. And I just didn't have it. But when I think back of my brother, when I think back of that remembering him, in April of 2005, I'm sitting in my living room as my life was once again in turmoil. And, you know, the steps tell me clearly that I must have a spiritual awakening. The spiritual life is not a theory. I must live it. I must find a power greater than myself. I must do this inventory process. I must share with another human being. And I always think of the trials and tribulations that are going to lie ahead. You know, putting down a drink is a great beginning. It's like, okay, what do I do now? How do I transform? Like, I put the drink down. And when I think of my brother, and when I think of that night in my living room in April of 2005, and as my life was in turmoil, as I continued to be selfish and self-centered, as I continued to practice selfish and self-centeredness in all my affairs, I had no solution to what was about to happen. This person knocked on my door. I was restless, irritable, discontented. I had nothing going on in my life that seemed terrific, that seemed great, and this girl knocked on my door. And she had a six-pack of booze, and she had a bag of crack. And she sat at my kitchen table, and she sat it down and put it there, and she goes, I shouldn't be doing this. You've been sober for 9 years. And I looked at her and said, don't worry about me. You know what? That beer looks pretty good right now. As a matter of fact, give me one of them and put a hit in that pipe for me, too. And I didn't think of my brother. Not one second did I think of my brother, who died 4 years previous. And I believe that I would never forget that. And he never entered my mind. I have two terrific, beautiful, wonderful kids. And I didn't think about them. I didn't think about them at all. I was without defense against what I was about to do. And it tells me in this book right here, the fact is, for reasons yet obscure, we've lost the power of choice in drink. I'm going to read it. I can usually do it, but I'm a little nervous. Hang with me. Here's what I experienced. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And I experienced that. I experienced that day at my house. And for the next 8 months, I went on a really downhill spiral. Broken down relationships all over again. Not that any of them got rebuilt because I never got to the ninth step. So, yeah, I'm sober, but I never made a direct amends to anyone. I'm sorry. Was never sincere. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it. Nobody told me. Like, no one come up to me and told me the truth. And no one come up to me and told me the truth because I wasn't hanging around with truth tellers. I was hanging around with people that were thinking and acting like me in AA. Not drinking, going to meetings, you know, eating the cookies, drinking the coffee, and going out and practicing selfish and self-centeredness in all my affairs. So for the next 8 months, I was pretty sick. I was drinking again. I was smoking crack again. I was doing dope again. I was doing anything you could imagine. I was the problem. I couldn't escape the pain. It just wouldn't go away. The pain would not go away. And on Christmas Day of that same year, Christmas Eve night, of 2005, I was not with very good people, and I was standing outside of a bar in downtown Easton, and we were drinking shots of Southern Comfort, and it was a real lonely night. Christmas Eve is a beautiful night. It wasn't for me. It was lonely, despairing, pretty horrible. And I got my car, and I drove back to my apartment, and I didn't know what to do. I wasn't talking to my mom. I wasn't talking to my kids. I wasn't talking to my friends other than the people that were doing what I was doing. I wasn't talking to any of them. Very, very lonely state. And here's what happened. The most profound, wonderful thing that ever happened to me happened that night. And I didn't know it was going to happen. I had no thought of it. The only thing I could do was turn the lights out and go to bed. I wanted to escape it all. And what happened was about 3:30 in the morning, I woke up out of a dead sleep. And I couldn't stop crying. I was bawling, crying profusely. I sat on the edge of my bed, and I was still crying. And I remembered the alkathon that was going on in at the Sober Club in Southside Easton. I didn't think of AA. I didn't think of that when I went to bed. What I've come to find out is God entered my spirit right there at that moment, at that time. And I went to that alkathon in Easton. And it was one of those meetings where they get to the meeting. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning by the time I got there. And you know those meetings you go to and they say, does anybody have a problem with alcohol that they care to share about? Or does anyone have a topic? And it's complete silence. And nobody's talking. And God moved my arm. And I put my hand up. And the only thing I could get out of my mouth as I was still crying was, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. As a matter of fact, there's one guy in this room tonight, back there, Donnie. He was at that meeting. And I got through that meeting. And I remember we were talking after that meeting. And it was just a little comment. Didn't really mean that much to me at the time. But I know what it meant now. The gentleman back there said to me, he goes, your life hasn't come to an end. It's just beginning. And it was. It was just beginning. And what happened in the next couple of months after that happened, this new spirit came into me. I was hearing a different message as I continued to go to AA. Those people that were talking about God in the steps that used to annoy me, and I used to get mad at them, and I used to think they didn't know what they were talking about. That was the message that God had me hearing. And I ran into this gentleman. His name is Mike. And we're in a car one day, and, you know, I still had foul language. We were driving to church, and he just looked over at me, and he goes, Joey, lose that word. I go, what word? He goes, you drop the F-bomb an awful lot. I go, oh, okay, I can do that. And I stopped using that word that day, and I haven't used it since. And I find that really interesting because I never had that power to take direction before from somebody else. But I was hopeless, and I was very desperate. And I wanted somebody to show me how they changed their life. And what happened was that guy that I was going to church with, he directed me to a meeting called the Firing Line. And the Firing Line meeting is a workshop meeting. And that workshop meeting, I went to. I showed up at it. And I was probably like 30 days, maybe 40 days sober at the time or alcohol free. Something profound was going on. I had this kind of new attitude that a little bit of change in the way I was seeing and thinking at that point. And the interesting thing is, like, I wasn't thinking about drinking or partying at that point. And they sent me to go to this meeting, go to this meeting. You'll love it up there. It's a workshop meeting. So I went to it. And I walked in this room, man. I saw all these guys up there. And, you know, that same arrogance came back in me. You know, they were talking about this book. And they were talking about the truth. Jim was there. Dominic was there. Beth Batches was there. State Store John was there. All these guys, and I'm thinking, like, who are these guys? Who do they think they are? And, like, they're talking about this message of like, hope and recovery. And, you know, I still had that little defiance in me, just a little bit. There was enough defiance in me to keep me from that meeting for a couple of weeks. And I ran into a guy that finally looked at me, and he goes, look. He goes, you need to go back to that meeting. I go, why do I want to go back to that meeting? Those guys are arrogant. He goes, because they're telling you the truth. They are telling you the truth. They are carrying this message of hope. How's your life working out for you? What do you got to lose? And I did. I went back to that meeting. And I sat in that meeting, and for some reason, God gave me the power to open my mind up and bring in some new ideas into my life. And, you know, and then I should really back up here. And I'm going to back up because there's a guy that really had a profound effect on me, too. And this was right before the firing line meeting. He's the guy that really introduced me to this book right here. He's the guy that grabbed me at the dry land meeting 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning as I was still crying. And he put his arms around me. And he said to me, he goes, do you want to get better? And he hugged me. He was hugging me. I go, yeah, I want to get better. He goes, what are you willing to do? I said, I'm willing to do anything. He goes, great. Meet me at my house tomorrow morning. And I did. I met him at his house the next morning. And he is the guy that opened this book up right here with me. And as a matter of fact, I don't see this guy too much. And he opens it up to this page right here, the blank page. And he said, that's what you know about getting sober. I go, okay. And we sat at his table. And we went through the first two steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the two steps that I did the 9 years before when I was in here. You know, yeah, I'm alcoholic. Yeah, I believe in God. Those two steps. And he gave me the launching pad that led me to these guys. and I eventually did get to that third step because as this guy talked to me about being powerless, and he showed me in the book, lack of power was my dilemma, and it made sense to me. I wanted to stop doing what I was doing for 25 years. 25 years I was out there drinking and drugging against my will. I didn't have the power. And I'm going to refer back here a little bit to an example of that lack of power. That lack of power. As I was cruising to New York City one day on Route 78, it was sometime in the 90s. I had these two wonderful kids at home. They were probably 6 and 7 at the time. I used to think about them all the time out there. I was running with some really bad people. And I had these two awesome children being taken care of by their mom. And I was one of those phone dads. Hi, kids. How you doing? You know, oh, pretty good, Dad. And, you know, hang the phone up and I'd feel better. But it wouldn't last long. And I'm on a trip to New York City, partying the night before. We're going to some more bad places. And I was sitting in the back seat. And the girl I was hanging with at the time, and yes, I was married. I was married at the time, but not home with my wife. I was hanging out with this other girl, selfish, self-centered, not really understanding, well, not understanding what integrity is and faithfulness is and any of that stuff, just completely running my own life. And I remember cruising up Route 78, and the guy in the driver's seat who didn't have kids, and the girl that I was dating was in the passenger seat, and I was really miserable. I was always miserable. I didn't want to be in that life. I couldn't get out. I could not get out of the life. I didn't want to be there, but I couldn't get out. I looked at these two, and I'll never forget it. Bobby Brown's Every Little Step I Take song was on. You know those songs you hear that you remember, like really bad places? That was on, and this kid in the driver's seat, man, he was singing it, and, you know, and we're traveling up the highway to New York, and the girl was dancing with him, my girl, supposedly. I'm in the back seat, and I'm miserable. I'm miserable. And this guy looks in the mirror. He goes, Joey. He goes, darn, do you ever smile? And what I was really thinking at that time, this is exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking, here I am in the middle of the day driving to New York City with two people that don't have a care in the world. And I have all these responsibilities. I have two kids that I'm supposed to represent and guide. And I thought, like, what if I died on this highway right now? What would they say about me? What would my legacy be? And with that thought, I did not possess the power to say, pull this car over, let me out. It was non-existent. It was not available to me. The power of what we were doing, drinking daily, partying daily, had me in the grips of a progressive disease that it's only by God's grace that I've been removed from. And I continued, and I went to New York, even with that thought. And that's just one of the examples of powerless that I experienced. And I could take the rest of this meeting up and give you more examples, but I'll spare you that. You've all known. Everybody knows them. Everybody knows the feeling. My greatest experience I had was as I took this journey through the steps, was admitting I was powerless with this gentleman. He just talked about being powerless. And he asked me, Joey, do you believe you're powerless? Do you think that lack of power is your dilemma? I had to, because he just got done telling me his personal experience through the first step. Yes, I believe I'm powerless. He goes, great, you've just taken the first step in recovery. Terrific. We went on to step two, and he told me his personal adventure through the second step. And the last time I was in AA, I believed in God. I just couldn't trust him. I couldn't trust him. I saw it. Dominic pointed it out to me. We had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him. It's remarkable. This guy looked at me. He goes, do you believe that God can help you? I said, yes, I believe God can help me. He said, great, you've just taken a second step in recovery. And I didn't do the third step with that gentleman. Actually, I did the third step prayer at the altar with Al. Is Al here tonight? Al is not here tonight. Said he'd be here. Al did the third step prayer with me at Midday Sobriety Group on a Friday afternoon in the church. Me and him went to the altar, got down on our knees, and we did the third step prayer. And there was a lot of energy going on. A lot of energy. There was some terrific things happening at that point, and I didn't even know what I was about to experience. And we come up out of that basement, and I was going to my car. And Al probably gave me one of the best messages any alcoholic ever gave me. He walked over to me at my car, And Al said, Joey, remember one thing. You didn't do nothing yet. All you did was make a decision. It's a commitment. It's a commitment. And Al's got this way about him. Sometimes folks get mad at him, but he's a truth teller. He is. He's a truth teller. And he told me, he launched me into a four-step inventory. And he told me to go home and do the first column, the resentment column. He goes, because he said, next, we don't wait. We don't wait. Al was very active at the firing line at this time. We don't wait. We take action. And I took the action. God gave me the power. I took the action. I did that resentment column. And I finished the rest of that four-step. And I shared it with a guy named Mark Krakow. Mark Krakow is non-alcoholic. He's a spiritual advisor. And I can use his name because I'm allowed to. He knows our program. He's Pastor Mark. He's a terrific friend. Because I already knew that it was about spiritual growth. It had to be. It tells me and how it works. The point is, I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines. It's the point. And I always think, like, whenever I'm in any conversation, I want to know what the point is. Well, the point in AA is that I want to grow along spiritual lines. It's my solution. Now, how can an alcoholic sit in these rooms for 9 years and not know that? Unwilling. Inability to deflate my ego. Inability to set my pride to the side. And I got to mention this guy. He's here tonight. Don't get embarrassed, Sobey. But I got to mention him. Because you know what? He was my first sponsor. He was the only guy that I can remember that tried to share this spiritual adventure with me. My first time in AA. Him. And he used to go, Joey, there's going to come a point in time when the only thing between you and a drink is God. You won't have the power. It'll be unavailable to you. I go, okay, Soap, okay. I got you. I know. You know those I know questions? I know. That's what I did all the time. I know. I fired him. I didn't want to hear it anymore. He was gone. And then I tell all the guys that I was attracted to, I got, you know, that guy, him and that God thing, man. You know, like, I didn't want to hear it. I mean, all that guy talks about is God. And I got to tell you guys, like, I hang around with a lot of people now that talk about God and the steps. God and the steps, man. We have, like, awesome conversations. And then I take it into my personal life. And that's a really neat thing. But sharing that four-step inventory with Mark and, you know, always paying attention at the firing line and taking the action. I still go there every Thursday. I still go there. I love it. There's so much power in sharing this experience with another human being. It holds me accountable. It gives me the ability to, like, you know, go out and live this wonderful life. Like, being recovered is an awesome thing. I never knew you could recover. I thought I always had to be white-knuckle sobriety. Let me get another day. Let me get to midnight. Let me stay away from neon lights. And if my brother calls me up to invite me to his party, I have to tell him to put his booze away. Selfish and self-centered all over again. I didn't know that I could be around alcohol. You know, but sharing that fifth step in, that inventory with Mark and really identifying, like, the exact nature of my wrongs, the exact nature. I love the book. It gives me specific direction, the exact nature. And I was able to see my part in my life, how I was the creator of all my problems. My troubles were of my own making. Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-pity. I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. I found that I made decisions based on self that later placed me in a position to be hurt. That is the way I live my life. It was there, it was visible, it was clear. And what was going on, guys? Here's what was happening. I didn't know, but it was happening. I was growing spiritually. Spiritual growth was taking place. And as I shared that, you know, step six came. And step six asked me to be ready. Ready. I got to be ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I got to be willing to get rid of all of them. And if I can't get rid of all of them, I got to ask for the willingness to be willing to get rid of all of them. And I know that a lot of times in AA we hear this, and you'll never hear me say this, because I hope you already know it, that we're not perfect. I don't use that term. Everyone knows that I'm not perfect, so I don't have to remind you of that. And because I used to say it in AA all the time. I used to be the guy in the room that would go, I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect. I had to say that. I wasn't living right. I was not living correctly. It was my escape route. Progress, not perfection. You know, let me continue to go on my way and serve Joey. Self-serving. Self-serving. And my friend Mark, Pastor Mark, we always talk about being servants. So it's really neat to continue to seek spiritual growth. You know, to go to church and, you know, seek out religious people. It tells me in the book we should do that. Hey, they probably know more than me about God. We will talk about God. I love that the book tells me that. I love that our program is a spiritual program. I love that I now know that not part of our program is spiritual. It is spiritual. And this is the fellowship that binds us. This is where I come share my experience. I don't come to meetings anymore because I think about drinking. I come to contribute. I come to this meeting tonight to contribute to AA. Step seven asked me to humbly ask. Step six wants me to be ready. Step seven wants me to ask. These proposals that this book asked me to take are clear. They're clear. And the interesting thing is that it's the only thing I know. It's the only thing that I know that has transformed my entire life. The way I think, the way I see. It's the only thing I know. The evidence is clear. The evidence that I have experienced is clear. Like, God has transformed my life. Step eight. Step eight wants me to be willing. So these steps want me to take more action. More action. I can't rest. I got to now be willing to right my wrongs. Having an inventory already. Looking at them on paper. Getting to step nine. And I talked to Dominic a lot about this. My step nine experiences were really terrific. And I believe they were terrific for this reason. Because the people I had to make amends to knew me better than anybody. And when I sat in front of them, they knew that something was different. It wasn't a typical I'm sorry, because I was being guided by a power greater than me. God entered my spirit. The transformation was happening. I sat with my two kids at the City Diner in Easton and talked to them thoroughly about what they had experienced in their life up to that point. It was profound. It was profound to sit in front of them and take some real responsibility for some of their shortcomings that I created. I'm their dad. You know, dads are supposed to guide their kids. I never thought of that. And their mother. I sat down with her, too. This woman that I absolutely didn't like. I didn't like her. She partied with me all through the years. But you know what? She's not alcoholic. When we had kids, she was able to stop and say, wow, I'm a mom. I have to take care of my kids. Well, the non-alcoholic can do that. They can put it down. They can leave it down and pay attention to the responsibilities. I couldn't do that. That nine-step amends I made with my wife, who we didn't like each other. Why would I like her? She told me the truth all the time. She always told me the truth. I'm terrific friends with that woman today. Great friends. I did a nine-step with that woman, the mother of my children. We are absolutely terrific friends. And as a result of that, I've watched my kids blossom, my son and my daughter. I've watched them be more calm, be more respectful. They don't feel like they're in the middle of everything. We actually talk. Like, she calls me up and talks to me about personal stuff and trust my input. God in the steps did that. Of myself, I'm the guy on the highway driving to New York, sitting in the back of that car, trying to figure out, how do I get out of this life? How do I get out of here? How do I stop this? It's absolutely crazy. Profound. Amazing experience. Step 10. What an awesome step. Step 10 tells me clearly I've been restored to sanity, placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. The alcohol problem has been removed. It doesn't exist. And in this book, it lets me know, it warns me immediately, contingent on the maintenance and growth of my spiritual condition. What an awesome message. How God gave me, Joey, the selfish, self-centered human being who could never stand in front of anybody and talk to you anything except for how bad this world is and the people in it, and yada, 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 all the questions we used to talk, all the things we talk about at the bar. God has inspired me to continue spiritual growth. Step 11 asked me to continue to seek. Saw it through prayer and meditation. And I love the words, to improve. To improve my conscious contact with God as I understand Him. Praying for knowledge of His will for me. And the greatest one of all, we were talking about it at the meeting last night, and the power to carry God's work, not my work, to be empowered to carry God's work. And What an awesome step, prayer, meditation. Then step 12. We devoted a whole chapter to it. And early in the chapter working with others, you know, it's talking about the guy that we're trying to plant the seed with. I found in my journey, in this spiritual journey that God has blessed me with, finding people that want this, that really want it, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. To sit down in front of another alcoholic. I'm going to share this quick story. We're getting close to the end here. I was trying to help this young man get sober. I like the kid. I like him a lot. He was supposed to be here tonight. He was calling me every day. And he was calling me every day telling me he wanted a drink. I don't say no. I go, the only thing I can say is exactly what happened to me. And exactly what Sobe used to tell me. I said to this young man, there's going to come a point where you're not going to have the power to call me. I am not God. I am not God. I can only give you if you want it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely love that word. Not just a little bit. Not just making the coffee and eating the cookies. Like, really committed completely to this simple program. It's here. And I said to this young man, buddy, the power's not going to be there for you. I can't help you. Are you willing to do the work? Are you willing to follow me and take this journey? Are you willing to sit down with me and go through these steps? Well, yeah, I'll write a little bit. So, no, are you really willing? He goes, yeah, I'll start writing. And I haven't heard from this young man since that. And I did call his phone. One of his buddies answered, and I could tell it was at a party, and he said he was sponsoring him. So I can't carry the message to someone that doesn't want it. What I've learned to do is not give my opinions. The toughest thing to do sometimes in AA, not at this group because I heard a lot about it, is to carry the spiritual message. I was the guy in a room who used to go, well, I'm not a big book thumper, but this is what I think. That was me. I'm not a big book thumper, but. I'm not a big book thumper, but. Well, that attitude got me drunk, got me high, got me jobless, got me broke again. That attitude failed, and it failed utterly. You know, it's a terrific life. It's a terrific life for anyone that wants it. It's roomy, it's all-inclusive, it's not exclusive. It's open for anyone that honestly seeks it. I know the evidence is there for me. I don't think about drinking anymore. I don't think about not drinking. I was a panhandler. I slept in backyards. I experienced all the bedevilments. That was me. That was me. What I'd like to do, guys, is stand up here for the next 2 hours and read this whole book. Because you know what it does? It holds me accountable. It re-inspires me. I got a minute here. I'm going to tell this story. It was Friday night. My friend Steve called me on the phone. 27 years. 27 years he's been doing this thing. You know what? I talked to him for 45 minutes on the phone. We were preaching to the choir. It was powerful. We were talking about guideless steps. That was before I went to my home group. There was energy flying with that conversation. It was beautiful, man. We were talking about being powerless and believing in God and like being removed from that awful, horrible life and having this like new way of living in this like terrific life. I'm not capable of that. But with God's power, all things are possible and all things can happen. And it has happened for me. And I'm so happy that Dave, where's Dave? Dave, thank you for asking me to come down here and share with you guys tonight. It's been a pleasure. We are at the hour. Thank you so much. I hope you guys got something out of this. And, you know, don't take what you want and leave the rest. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not the message. Thank you for letting me share.